This is a very special recording of Titanic Talk, recorded and streamed live on April the 14th, 2024. To commemorate the 112th anniversary of Titanic's tragic sinking and to honour the 1,500 people who lost their lives on April the 15th, 1912, Nelson Aspin and Alexandra Boyd host a special live episode with the return of some of their special Titanic Talk guests from around the globe.
Waiting for Titanic Talk, April 14th, 2024 at 3 p.m.
But everybody else can see and hear us, apparently, at least here.
Yes,
on this platform. Oh, here we go. Now we are live on YouTube as well. And I'm going to mute that so I don't hear myself back. My name is Nelson Aspin. If you don't know that by now, you can look at the bottom of your screen to be reminded of where I am. And if you haven't figured out, I'm in New York City. The sirens, the wail of the fire engines, police cars, and ambulances will tell you that. This is a very special edition of Titanic Talk. It's Titanic Talk Live with my lovely and effervescent co-host, filmmaker Alexandra Boyd. Good Sunday to you, Alexandra.
Hello from Washington State, from the Olympic Peninsula, in my forest with my pugs and my ridgeback. I'm really sort of tingling with excitement because we're so relaxed with our lovely guests, and we chat with them for about 40 minutes, and it's a recording, and then I can take all the ums and ahs and all
the profanity, you
know, the profanity,
the gas,
everything out. But this, there's no hiding from this one. We're here and we're live, and we are commemorating what is the 112th anniversary of the tragedy of the sinking of Titanic, but also celebrating this amazing community that has gathered around us.
I was thinking about the fact that when you have mass casualty events, as happened all too frequently, but they stand out as milestones in your life. Nothing has ever captivated people the way that the tragedy of Titanic has, and yet it spurns people on to positivity. I was thinking about the art that has been created as a result of Titanic, the tragedy, the history, the people that have pursued careers in exploration and science. It has manifested so much positive stuff out of such a tragedy. So
maritime safety, you know, enough lifeboats, you know, and whistles and lights on life jackets and binoculars and things like that, that are just now maritime law, literally.
And to think, 112 years in the history of the world is not a very long time when people are living to the age of 100. You know, 112, what is that? It's nothing. And it is a stark reminder. And thanks to the films that we have, including Ship of Dreams, Titanic Movie Diaries, we are constantly reminded of the humanity behind the story. It's not just some sort of soulless historical event. And when you and I were discussing doing this special episode of Titanic Talk and reuniting a lot of our former guests and a couple of new surprises as well today, as well as expanding precipitation
is a weather.
I'm so excited to have the participation of our listeners as well is really extraordinary, and a great sense of community. And to do it today, which is a Sunday, so it's a little more convenient than on a weekday. So it is the anniversary of the striking of the iceberg, as we're all going to know. And what a gift your documentary, Ship of Dreams, Titanic Movie Diaries, was to all of us, because not only is the documentary splendid, but it generated this podcast. Titanic Talk exists initially as a way to promote the documentary, and now it's taken on a life of its own. How many episodes have we done?
We're at 34 out in the world, and about 4 or 5 still to go to round out season 2.
It is amazing. And then to get to do special episodes like this, I think, is the way forward. I think that's a good way to keep moving forward.
It's spontaneous, and it's, you know, anything can happen. But I think we're going to be just fine. I also sort of want to shout out on the subject of the documentary is that exactly a year ago, we did a small online release And we've so then retracted it, and it's been to the Valley Film Festival in Los Angeles, which is where we had our premiere. And this summer, all being well, we will release definitely in Canada, definitely in the US, and definitely South Korea, but elsewhere as
well. That's one place I've never released yet, so I'm looking forward to
it. It's the first time for everything, obviously. and there's more to come. We're in the hands of a very good sales agent who are experienced in bringing documentaries in particular to the world. And since we are going around the world today, practically, you know, it's a good start, I think. It's a good start.
All things Titanic are so rife for dramatization, analysis, whether it's a documentary, a dramatization, television, film, theater. Titanic, the musical, is coming back for a limited engagement here in New York.
And Titanic. We had Titanic.
And Titanic is ongoing.
And so, then Michael Kinnan's one-man show who does the entire film in one go.
Our most recent guest on Titanic Talk, and spoiler alert, Alexandra and I have booked our tickets to see his show. So
we never let go. Never let go.
Never Let Go is the name of the show here in New York City. It's off Broadway in Brooklyn. That's off Broadway, but it's going to be worth the trip, and we're so excited. It's gotten rave reviews. He was a great guest. So check out. That's another thing about this. As we go through our list of some past guests from Titanic Talk, if there was one whose episode you missed or you want to revisit, you can always go back and do that. They're all there, except for the remaining four we have yet to post. So
that's the nice
thing.
And then they'll be there forever, too. And so you can always go back. So they're on
Apple Podcasts.
Apple Podcasts, you should subscribe there, because actually I have my favorite podcasts. Titanic Scene by Scene is one of them. They've nearly reached the end of the film. They've got one scene left and the credits, Brittany and Ethan. So I've subscribed to them, and I listen to them while I'm chopping my onions and vegetables for dinner. It's so entertaining. I've been a guest twice on the podcast just to talk about cinematic wondrousness. But as an example, I subscribe to them, and every time they put out a new podcast, it pops right up in my Apple Podcasts, and I get an email as well. So if you do that for Titanic Talk, you can be sure to get the remaining parts of the season, but also then just scroll all the way back and start at the beginning, and you'll have some entertainment while you're chopping vegetables as well.
And we love Cove, and we love Unsinkable, and it, you know, there's
oh yes, all the other
world.
Yes,
there are so many to choose from, and some of those podcast hosts will be with us today. But we're going to kick off the day, and we're going to try and run this. I'm the timekeeper, so I'm like that horrible guy in the pit, the orchestra pit at the Oscars, who when they're running out of time, they start to kindly play the music, and then the music gets louder as the time goes on. So we're trying to budget this to get everybody in and everybody a chance to speak. But if you hear me kindly say, that was wonderful, so-and-so. Alexandra, who do we have next? You'll just sort of politely get the hook.
Yes.
It's not because we don't love you. It's because we got to get to the next one.
We want to make sure, yes.
We know that our first two guests, they're in the room, according to Alexandra.
Yes, they are. Let's just bring them in.
They're from the Ship of Dreams Titanic Movie Diaries documentary, so I'm going to leave it to Alexandra to do the introduction.
Well, Hello, guys.
Where's Dale? He's gone. There he is. Device not connected. Didn't this happen last time when we went live? And he
I think
he's got a dodgy connection, as they say in Essex.
Well,
at stage.
There we go. I'm feeling good about this.
Dale, can you hear us?
Dale and Ilka are like.
Oh yes.
He's coming. There we go. There we go. Look at these two beauties. This is a little bit like the Brady Bunch. You look down, you look up, you look over. Alexandra, tell us about Dale and Ilka, how you found them and what their gifts are.
Well, Instagram. Thank God for Instagram, because I actually lose hours of my life looking at beautiful photographs on Instagram. I love it. And of course, I was totally drawn to, this is like 2 or 3 years ago, to Dale's miniature versions of Kate Winslet's costumes and other amazing movie costumes. And then Ilka as a perfect other side of the same coin reproduces. You can see two of her extraordinary dresses in the background that are sequin by sequin, glass bead by glass bead replicas of Kate Winslet's costumes in Titanic. Dale and Ilka, they go together like a horse and carriage. Like a something, because.
And coming to us from Europe, we've got Dale in the UK and Ilka is in Germany. And Ilka just posted something on Instagram this morning that was exquisite. Ilka, tell us about that.
Yes, something new.
Well, I actually never had the chance to photograph my kimono that I made probably, I'm not even sure, I think 2 years ago already. And yesterday I had a photo shoot finally presenting that in full glory. And I made a little selection of photos that I'm gonna post by and by. So that was a nice feeling wearing your work that you took a lot of care with and devoted many hours to. So that was a special moment for me.
And you looked so beautiful in it as well.
Yes, did you wear it properly? Were you, or did you have like a modesty? I'm dying to know how you put that together.
Well, I actually had some kind of modern nude shapewear thing on because I didn't want to be like without anything. Exactly. So that worked pretty well.
Oh, good. Good for you. And Dale, what are you working on at the moment?
He's working on the connection. Are you all right? Yeah. Are you all right there?
Dale, I don't think he can hear me. I think he might have the same problem you did.
Luckily, he can just get by on his looks. So now, Ilka, I want to know what's going to happen with these things. I mean, you display them, you share them with us on social media. Would you ever be willing to part with them if the price was right?
Well, the answer to that is very easy. Never. Like, there's no money in the world that can buy those dresses from me. Just because I think, like, you have a special connection when you work on something for such a long time. Like, the dinner dress behind me, for example, has around 350 hours of beadwork. So I don't think there's an amount of money that can actually compensate for the back pain and all of that you put into that, all the blood and sweat, literally.
What if someone commissioned you? Would you take commissions like that?
I don't do commissions because I am actually self-taught. I'm not a professional seamstress, as most of you know. And I just don't have experience with that. And I would feel horrible if someone would commission me and then would not be maybe happy with the fit or something. And I don't have these patterns in various sizes. I made them for myself. So I have like my size and that's it. I get many questions about commissions and I'm always feeling horrible to say like, no, I'm sorry, I don't do that. So, but I did do other pieces. For example, I did the flying purse, that is crochet work, or I don't know, some little works like that that I do sell when the right person appears.
You've developed so many amazing skills. It seems to me that you must have really gained an appreciation for Edwardian ladies who sat down all day sewing and putting these amazing pieces together because they had the time, I'm assuming. And
would you have me be a seamstress?
Horrible.
Even the seamstresses who made the costumes for Titanic, which would have been another whole undertaking.
Has Dale got us?
Dale, can you hear us?
Dale. He's the strong, silent type.
Yeah, he went away and came back, but he can't hear us. I wonder what that is.
Oh, there he goes.
That's
maybe you can send him a message in the chat when he comes back.
Yes, and maybe we can keep trying with him. How are we doing on time, Nelson?
Fine. We're gonna go a few more minutes in here, and Ilka's going to tell us about the experience of meeting Dale and participating in the Ship of Dreams Titanic Movie Diaries documentary.
Well, that was a bit crazy because I had actually no idea that Alexandra would be in London as well. And the plan was to meet Dale for the very first time. And my husband actually captured this moment with his phone. And that was super special for us because Alexandra also used that in her documentary. And then we were in this beautiful garden and Dale said, okay, so let's move onto the Royal Albert Hall. And we were kind of making our way there. And yeah, just standing around there out of nowhere, Alexandra appeared and was like, oh my God.
With a film crew.
So, yeah, where Alexandra goes, the film crew follows.
She can't really blend in.
It was the hottest day of the year. Do you remember how hot it was?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
It was very hot.
But it never shows on camera, which I never believe, because everyone's just, you know, fainting with the heat. It was a challenge. But and then the Royal Albert Hall people came out and told us to stop filming, which we didn't.
Yeah, and my husband actually made them be busy and kind of kept them away from you. He kind of talked them into something.
Can you tell me about the architecture? Yeah.
Yeah, well, that kind of thing.
Are you doing anything to commemorate the anniversary in particular, besides just this chat with us?
Well, the photo shooting that I had was kind of, it was a coincidence that it happened that day, but I kind of thought like, okay, now you did something Titanic. But in the end, I always work on something. I always have some running project. And then next to that project, I have one or two little projects. So, and yeah, there's always something going on.
Is there anything Titanic related happening at the moment? Besides
a project, you mean?
Yeah. Have you got a project?
Well, the white gown behind me, the heaven gown, is still in progress with the beadwork. You can see that on the lower levels, it's still missing the beadwork because I just didn't have the time. And I revised the bodice for my flying gown. I made a new one because I'm better than I was back then. I wanted to make better. And I actually got out for you my latest project, which involved woodwork, which is Rose's parasol. So I restored this antique parasol with custom printed fabric. I did the handle and polish and everything. So there was a whole new skill set, and I really loved doing that. So there's always something going on.
It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. I think I know a lot of people are watching the film today, and a lot of people are watching Titanic Honor and Glory, mm-hmm. who've done the sinking in real time. And James Penker, he's like the artistic director of Titanic Honor and Glory. I know he couldn't join us today because he's hosting his own event. They're probably talking through the whole thing. It's quite an extraordinary and moving thing to watch. And the sound is there. It's just there. You can just hear voices, or you can just hear creaking and groaning, or you can hear the water rushing. And of course, we were so lucky to have so many of those digital renderings from Titanic Honor and Glory in the documentary.
Yeah.
And he was a great guest as well.
Yes. such a wide variety. Poor old Dale. I feel so badly for him.
I want to, in his absence, Alexandra, explain Dale's gifts to our audience if they don't already know.
Well, they're just amazing. When I first met him in London, he's from South Africa, from Durban, and he was visiting his mum who lives in the UK. And I was like, well, come and see me, because I wanted to see those miniatures he makes up close. I wanted to be able to touch them and see them. And he brought them all, and we had tea, and he has them wrapped in this silk scarf, which Ilka and I are always giving him a hard time about, because they just kind of tumble out of the scarf and then get rolled back up. I said, you need like a little valise, a little vintage suitcase. And I think he's actually bought himself one now. And we just made friends. He made a dress for me for the New York premiere of my first film, Widow's Walk. I sent him my measurements, and they made a dress and posted it to me, which was fantastic. So there was another connection. He's working in Essex for one of my dearest and oldest friends in the world, Laura Daly, who has a wedding dress shop, and that's what Dale is. He's working. He's a bespoke wedding dress designer, which is what he was doing in South Africa, and now he's doing it in Essex to be close to his mum.
Well, we have to. We encourage everyone. Dale, do you hear us?
I do.
We were just talking about you. We've got 1 minute left for you to show us your best. Hold up one of your beautiful pieces to the camera for us.
What I've been doing this week is running through the Kate's costumes through the film. So Wednesday, the boarding outfit, going through everything. And today she changed often on Sunday. So we have flying outfit.
Amazing. Flying outfit. Show the little hair, the little butterfly hair.
Oh, it's somewhere. It is somewhere.
It's somewhere.
Well, thank God for your Instagram page, and we appreciate your valiance for trying to get in here. Look at that, how magnificent that is.
Yes, that matches.
The mini version.
I'm now on the very iPad I used to do the sketches for the Ship of Dreams film. So there we go.
Oh, yes, yes, right, you have to check out his artwork.
I'm sorry, Alexandra, do you have the next, the group ready to go?
I do, yes, I do. All I right. have, yes.
All right. We encourage everyone to go to Dale and Ilka's, go backstage. We'll, you know, stand by. If we can get you back, we will. And Alexandra's going to introduce the next guests.
Oh, I will. I will. Here we go. Don't hate me. Right there. I'm going.
This is when I get to have a sip of wine.
Yes. Here comes. Here comes Judy Preston and
Oh, and they're all together.
And don't. Oh my gosh, what a treat.
This is a treat. Also, it's great to see Judy and Ellen again, but Don, I haven't seen since the Borders bookstore release of the Ghosts of the Abyss book. And Don is Titanic royalty because he's the go-to historian. So if you can explain, Don, how you met these lovely ladies and why you're all at the Queen Mary together on this special weekend.
Well, I met them through working on the movie. These two ladies were extras and we got to know each other, I think probably by the time we finished, not during. And then we're here on the Queen Mary for the Titanic Book Club gathering. And so we're the three of us are speaking later. And so just and having a great time.
Did they give you a stateroom? That's also where they filmed a lot of the Poseidon Adventure. So you've got a lot of history on that old tub.
Oh yeah, long before the Poseidon Adventure, there was a lot of history on the Queen Mary.
That's right. Well, ask Paul Gallico about that. And Judy and Ellen, you've also been doing writing about this. You were two of the core extras on James Cameron's Titanic. I mean, you knew no class. You went from one class to the other, from deck to deck to deck. What does this weekend mean to you guys?
Well, it's getting together with people that we've known for a while and seeing old friends and just having a nice weekend. And we're going to be sharing some of our memories and things today with the book club and meeting more new people.
Yeah. The Titanic family just keeps expanding and expanding. What are your fondest memories? And this is a question for each of the three of you. If you can sort of succinctly tell us, what are your fondest memories of working on the film version of Titanic? What's the primary thing that jumps out when somebody says, what's your best, fondest memory?
I can tell you, right now it is meeting all the other people that are on the set. I just loved it. Everybody was so nice. And I mean, sure, there were a lot of strange things going on, but it was fun. It was great. And learning all sorts of behind the scenes type of a thing was fascinating. Absolutely.
Yeah, we wanted to, when I went down there, my first initial thought was, I want to see everything, do everything, meet everybody, go everywhere. And I did.
And we basically did. Yes.
Yeah. For months.
And And we had to, you know, we had to make those friendships so we could do that. You know, we had to develop those relationships. It wasn't like all of a sudden we were on the set and we could go anywhere we wanted to. No, we earned it.
And Don, your participation, I was going to say, because for the ladies, Alexandra included here, their job was finite. But yours, you were there before, during, and after, I assume.
Yeah, and I got to be an extra, but I also, I have to say, walking the decks, being able to tour the ship, and I did get to go wherever I wanted to go. Jim did tell me right up front, you can go anywhere, you just can't stand in front of a moving vehicle or under a crane. And he didn't mention anything about the ladies' dressing room. I mean, I guess they could go anywhere. But, you know, again, I have to agree, it's meeting the people. I've met some wonderful people in the movie, but I enjoyed the experience of being part of a movie. I enjoyed the experience of walking the decks of the Titanic as it looked in 1912. And that was just spectacular.
Donna, I have to tell you, we just got one of our other guests, Greg DiNapoli, is an incredible artist, and he has done some beautiful work of lighthouses and ships and architecture, and he just posted on the YouTube. I've been a huge fan of Don Lynch since I was a kid, and it's true. For so many of us Titaniacs, I had an album back when there was vinyl, and it was a telling of the Titanic story. And you and Ken Marshall were featured on the back cover of that album. So there I was. I don't know what years that would have been. I'm guessing mid-70s. But you've been a part of our Titanic family before we even knew we had a Titanic family. What was the nucleus moment that got you involved with her story?
I think it probably was reading A Night to Remember. And at that point, I was hooked. There was just no turning back.
And where did you, like, we didn't have that in school. We got Of Mice and Men and Lord of the Flies. And how did you get your hands on a copy of that?
Well, I had seen the Poseidon Adventure. Here I am on the Queen Mary. And wanted to know what real shipwrecks were about. You know, I thought it was a great movie. And it is on the big screen. The small screen, the Poseidon Adventure doesn't play quite as well. But I really wanted to see what real shipwrecks were about. And I went to the library, checked out several books, one of which was Walter Lord's A Night to Remember. And that was the one that hooked me among the others, more than the others.
And what about you, ladies? Does your passion for Titanic extend beyond the James Cameron film now that you've appeared in it? And, you know, that has its whole fan base of its own. But do you has the story of Titanic gripped you in other formats?
Oh, yes. I mean, when I was like 7 years old, I saw the Barbara Stanwyck 1953 Titanic. And that's what fascinated me. And then when I got a little older and I could go to the library, like Don said, he checked out the book. And then I was able to get like old newsreels on projector. I'd rent a projector and bring it home, and I'd watch those, and I'd show them to my kids. And that's how, you know, and then when they went and found Titanic, you know, I was like glued to that. Yeah. When Ballard finally found her, I was just like, I couldn't get enough of the information.
It still compels us. And one of the saddest moments, of course, was the submersible, the wreck of the submersible that happened in the last year. You know, which just went to show you that Titanic is still on our minds. It's still part of our pop culture consciousness. It's not just a 20th century thing. It's come right into the 21st century. And as evidenced by the appeal in Alexandra's documentary, and you guys you provide some of the most moving moments. Alexandra, how did that happen? Was that just the gift of storytelling when you were interviewing them?
Well, I think I'm a baby documentary filmmaker, so I knew, but I did know that because people were reading their personal diaries and their own, you know, I was there in 1996 stories, that it couldn't not connect to people's hearts, to their own hearts. And I was a bit, I mean, Judy has her book, which she had her with her, but all the other diarists were not allowed to read their diary until they sat in the chair and read it for the camera, because I wanted to have spontaneous memories. And as a result, and because of the subject matter and because of, you know, Judy's personal story and Ellen's personal stories, it's Titanic. It's what it does for us. I don't want to give it away. I don't want to spoil some of the beautiful storytelling, personal storytelling, that is always so engaging. I also want to point out, some people might be going, what is Don Lynch in the film? What is he? You are part of that beautiful recreation of that photograph by Father Brown. Am I correct? Where
yes,
you're playing
yes.
The top with the little boy.
Yeah, I'm the father of the little boy spinning the top. It's Frederick Spedden, who, you know, ironically, the little boy then later is hit by a car, and I drown in a swimming pool.
Oh, but, wow.
You know, but they're based on real people. And
everybody's got to go sometime, I guess. You know, what are you going to do? And on that note, we have our next guest waiting in the backstage, right, Alexandra?
Yes, we do. Yes, it's Dr. Michael Martin.
All right, Judy, Ellen, and Don, a big thank you. Stick around and enjoy the rest of the show if you can. And you're forever part of the Titanic family that Titanic Talk just cherishes.
Thank
you. And Don, we should have you on for a full episode.
Yeah, we're gonna nag you to do a full hour with us.
I feel like we've just got the tip of the iceberg in 10 minutes. Oh, that was naughty. Sorry. Naughty.
Okay. I'm excited about our next guest because he's an old friend of mine from a zillion years ago when I was working for Irish television. And because of my Titanic passion, they sent me to Cove to do a story on the Titanic Trail. And the man behind the Titanic Trail is our next guest, Dr. Michael Martin. I see a big W, but I don't see his face yet.
I can see your boat very clearly.
All right. Well, we can hear you.
I can hear you very clearly.
Keep playing with it, and I'm going to give you the big buildup because everybody thinks, oh, well, you go to Ireland, you've got to go to Belfast, and of course, that's where the Belfast Museum is, but you also have to go to Cove, formerly known as Queenstown, which was Titanic's last port of call, and it touched me so, not because of the film Titanic, just because of my own passion for the history of Titanic. And so much of Titanic's history in Cove is immaculately preserved, thanks to Dr. Martin, who will actually take you on a tour that it's called the Titanic Trail, and it's a walking tour around Cove. Tell us what one experiences on the Titanic Trail.
Well, what I do on the Titanic Trail every day is we take people on a guided walking tour around the town of Cove. And what's absolutely extraordinary about Cove is that all the original buildings, streets, and piers are all still there. So we don't have to take them into a museum and show them a digital image or a picture. We say, that is the building they left from. This is the railway station they all arrived into, the passengers. Those railings were there when they were walking down the street 112 years ago. So it really is one of the few places in the world where you can get totally and completely immersed. And you're looking through the eyes of those passengers. You know, you can see the same buildings, the same streets. So we just take great joy in taking people around. And, you know, you can see a sort of a realization coming into their faces. And they're just blown away by it. And we've been doing that for 26 years now. We started our walking tour in 1998. And I still get a huge buzz of my engagement with the people on the tours. So it's wonderful. It's a
think how many steps you've gotten in over the years walking the Titanic. So it's good for your fitness as well. How is the Titanic Trail and the town of Cove? Is it a city? Is it a town? How is Cove commemorating the anniversary weekend?
Well, in a ceremony that I created 22 years ago, I came up with this idea that, you know, it's a big part of our heritage, it's a big part of our history, it's oozing from every wall, we should be marking this. So initially I went to the local mayor, and I went to the pastor and the priest and people like that, and then I got the group of ex-servicemen and women, you know, to add some, I suppose, gravitas to our national flag and so on. So I created this ceremony where we lay wreaths at the little Titanic memorial, and then we are accompanied over by our ex-servicemen, and we go to the dock, right beside the dock where those people left from, and we cast a flower in, calling a name of all the people who didn't survive, because of the 123 who left from Cove, only 44 of them survived. So we say a prayer and reply poetry. Now, that was 22 years ago. There's other people organised that now, and like all small town politics, you probably don't even get an invite to it. But in any event, it went ahead today. And I know that there would have been lots of people come to Cove to engage with it. I myself was in Belfast. I just traveled down today where the British Titanic Society had their annual convention, and they're commemorating it there tonight. By going down onto the remaining part of the slipway, there's a tiny part of the slipway still up there, and they're having a candlelit vigil at 20 minutes to 12 this tonight, the 14th of April. So I was delighted to be a part of their deliberations over the last couple of days. And I met a friend of yours, Nelson.
Uh-oh, who's that?
Pablo.
Oh, yeah. One of our past guests and a former employee of the Belfast Museum.
And it's amazing. His birthday. He not only is he a super Titaniac, it's his birthday. So I think once he put two and two together with that, he knew he had to follow the story.
Yeah. He asked me to connect you guys. And I was like, you know what? The nicest thing about this day and age is you can connect with anybody. Yeah. And I said, if you see Michael, give him my very best.
Yeah. And I should correct myself. We didn't meet face to face, but he contacted me and I arranged a tour for him in Cove because I wasn't here. And he did that and enjoyed it. And he was very gracious. And this morning in the Titanic Hotel in Belfast, he sent me a text, I knew he was going to be there. And he says, I'm down in the breakfast room. Aww. And by the time I got down, I had missed him. So we didn't actually meet, but we conversed a lot by phone.
That's nice. Your ships that passed in the night, like the Californian and the Titanic, but neither one of you're in each other's clutches now. And that's what Alexander and I have learned. We are amassing this Rolodex of beautiful people with, of all different, from all over the world, as evidenced by this, but of all different occupations and ages, and it's fascinating the reach and the gift that Titanic has given us. And I don't even remember what year it was that I came there, but it had to be 15 years ago.
Yeah, I think it's more, Nelson, but let's not go there.
You tell so many wonderful stories about the Cove connections to Titanic, but my favorite, I think, is about the lucky guy that deserted the ship. Can you tell our audience that story?
Yeah, there was a chap from Cove. His name was John Coffey, and he got work with the White Star Line, and he was sent to work on board Titanic and left Southampton on board a ship. Now, he was employed as a trimmer, and these were the guys that were deep in the bowels of the engine room. A lot of the movies show the stokers. These are the guys shoveling the coal into the thing. But the person who supplies the stoker was the trimmer. They'd come along with wheelbarrows full of coal. And, of course, they were always advised in their training that they must take the coal in equal parts from either side of the ship to keep it trim. If you take it all from one side, she's going to list over to starboard. So they deep in the bowels of the engine room. In any event, John Coffey, for reasons we don't quite know, decided when the ship was anchored in Cove, very briefly, from 12 noon to 1:30, he climbed into one of the tenders and covered himself with returning mailbags and deserted the ship. He deserted. Now, that almost certainly saved his life, because we all know, the percentage of people lost in the engine room was dreadful. But of course, later people said he had a premonition. I kind of never found any evidence of that.
He just wanted off that ship. And how did he disguise himself?
He had a bad feeling.
He covered himself with returning mailbags. And it was gas. I was doing some projects with a local school many years ago. And the kids asked questions, told them a few stories and so on. But it's still in my memory today. One of the projects was the children had to do a little painting after I had been to speak to them. So there was this young child, and they drew a boat, and all you could see was four fingers coming over the gunwale, like there was somebody hidden. It was fantastic. But I think what I remember, I suppose, of most tonight, and it's a pity my camera isn't working, I don't know why, because I had a little replica of a plaque, and it was a plaque that... Rory Golden, a dear friend of mine who has descended to the Titanic on a number of occasions, in August of 2020, I got a plaque made in a foundry in Cork. And Rory was able to lay this on the bridge of the ship. And I think it's worth reading out what I put on it this evening.
Please do.
And it said, commemorating, I had hoped to show this to you, the little replica, but anyway, it says, commemorating all those lost on RMS Titanic, from the people of Cove, Queenstown, and Ireland. And then beneath that, a little Irish sentiment or prayer. I asked the advices of a friend of mine who's a very good Irish speaker, and he gave me this lovely little sentiment, which reads in Irish, Gatuga an dia suvna siri de hanamata, and in English that translates to a sentiment that kind of means, may your God gather your soul into your heaven. And I just am so proud of the fact and so grateful to Rory Golden for placing that on the bridge. And it's still there with all the documentaries that go down there. Yeah. You can see it every time. It's right there beside the steering column. And I think that's a very appropriate thing for this evening.
It is. No,
it's so appropriate when all this discussion about raising the Titanic and all the stuff that's been retrieved from what's, you know, essentially a gravesite. I think that's the absolute, you know, the way for you personally to commemorate and all the Irish people who were lost. I think it's a fantastic thread, if you like.
And I meant to say earlier, I had a great pleasure of meeting Don many years ago. He was in Cove. He may not remember, but I was delighted to have met him because, like you said earlier, he's the royalty of.
You're a legend too, Michael. We're sorry, we're going to have to wrap this up, but you're forever with us. We're grateful that you were able to join us today.
Thank you for coming, Michael.
And we have another one of our Titaniac family members from Titanic Talk, one of our most delicious guests, and I have three of her books. Alexandra, who's next?
It is Veronica. Look at her! She's made.
Is that a charcuterie board? What's going on there?
Cheese board for us, and she's also on the sauce. I heard is there a cocktail in your hand?
Not yet, Alexandra. This is one of the pre-prohibition cocktails that would have been served aboard the Titanic, more than likely. This is the Blue Moon cocktail.
What's in it? Tell us the ingredients, please.
It was very popular at the time, creme de violet or violet liqueur, which is so lovely and flavorful. Violet was really popular in the Edwardian years. There were violet candies.
My grandma used to have violet candies, and they kind of tasted like violets. I mean, I have no idea how they did.
Yeah, so this is one of the great gin drinks of Prohibition. And I wanted to show you how easy it is to make. You just
make
up a little bit of gin and the creme de violet, shake it up with some ice and some lemon juice, and just strain it into it. Hopefully you have a Edwardian glass and garnish it with a little bit of lemon. Oh. I wanted to show everybody what one of the cocktail shakers would have looked like. Fantastic. And then the cheeses. These are not just any cheeses. There was the same cheese assortment at lunchtime every day in first class. So it's so easy to entertain with a little bit of Titanic or Edwardian flair. You don't have to be a French chef. You can put together some of the cheeses that were on the menu every day.
Well, listen to cheeses, Veronica, because I love a bit of strong cheese. None of this Monterey Jack nonsense for me.
Right? I know, Alexandra. Can you see the cheeses okay?
Well, I can, but you need to read them off.
It's tiny. So, yes, talk us through it, Veronica, please.
So there are two cheeses that aren't on the board that were on the menu every day. And one of them was Roquefort. And the other was Cheshire. So I have five of the seven. This is Stilton right here. It's kind of like a blue cheese.
Nice and stinky.
Nice and stinky, if you like that.
Yes.
And who doesn't? Cheddar. The front cheese is a soft cream cheese that was very popular at the time. It's called Saint-Yval, and it's no longer made. But very similar to Philadelphia cream cheese. That's right in the front. And then camembert, which is a lot like brie.
Mm.
Lovely.
And then the Stilton is here. And this is Gorgonzola.
Lovely. My dad loved a good cheese plate. He'd have tried every single one of those. Tell us about your books, because you've written not one, but two Titanic food books based on these menus, not just cheese boards.
Well, the newest book is the book that celebrates the 25th anniversary of the Cameron Titanic movie. And I've got to tell you, we watched the movie together yesterday, Alexandra, and I thought about you through the whole movie because it's the first time I've watched it since I've known you. And I'm just so grateful to have gotten to know you and talk about the movie and everything with you and in the show we did together and again today. This is a book that includes things that were on the menu, like the salmon with mousseline sauce. They were on things that were on the menus, but also things like I included some melted milk balls because that would have been a good movie snack for a good movie party. And the Blue Moon cocktail is in this book. So it's a really nice cooking.
And the photographs are lovely too, we have to say. And where'd you get the White Star Line napkins?
Oh, I'm glad you asked, Nelson, because this is my fun purchase this year.
They're amazing. Where are they from? Yes.
From the Strauss Museum.
Ah.
And they are a splurge, but they are worth it. I always try to get some every year. And there's one other thing I want to, something I buy every year is a bottle of chartreuse.
Oh.
And chartreuse.
Very peppery. It's very peppery liqueur, right? Because I remember.
That's a good word for it. Kind of minty, evergreeny, and chartreuse jelly with peaches and cream.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, on the first class dinner menu 112 years ago tonight. That's what they ate for dessert.
What are you having for dinner tonight, Veronica? Are you doing a Titanic meal tonight?
We did it yesterday. We had, we're not doing an 11-course dinner this week. You know how busy it's been. I know you guys have been really busy too. So no 11-course dinner.
They were little courses though. I liken it to a tasting menu. It's not like, oh God, here comes the fish. I don't think I can, especially in those corsets.
Yes. Yeah, there were small portions. Yesterday we had lamb and mint. What else did we have? Some of the tea sandwiches from the new book. And my first book is...
I have to say, I'm going to give you the plug now for the new book, because actually somebody in the chat, Amateur Time Lord, said, I need to get my own copies of her books, especially the new Harry Potter one. And I'm lucky enough to have a copy of that, as is Alexandra. And some of those, now I've set you up to tell me about those tea sandwiches, because they looked amazing.
Oh, they're so good. There's tea sandwiches in both books. The new book for the Titanic and then the Harry Potter book is all about tea. So if you like teas and afternoon tea or high tea,
Scotted cream, yum.
Yes. And a lot of, creative ideas from the Harry Potter movies. And that book celebrates the Harry Potter movies. So...
do you know what's next? Can you talk about what you're doing next? Because food and film go together. I imagine.
I was going to say, what's the next film you'd love to tackle?
Well, I am going in September. The Great Gatsby Cooking and Entertaining Guide will be out. And then I'm working on something right now that I can't talk about just yet. But I know where to find you both, and I will be sharing soon about the new project.
Yes, and you have a website too that people can find all of your info. Is it veronicahink.com?
Yes, or you can go to foodstringer.com.
Right.
Or just search one of the books.
Yes.
I have to say, before we let you go, Veronica, you have become really a darling friend. You are a friend we have yet to meet in person, but... your spirit and your whole energy, your generosity, your humor, your lightness. We just adore you. You twinkle. You literally twinkle.
Thank you so much, Veronica. Thank you.
Thank you. Mwah.
Thanks again, Veronica.
Bye. All right. You know who's next.
I know. I'm going to go run to the stern just to talk about this is a woman we have met and we love her. Alexandra, please do the introduction.
Well, Rebecca, Mother at Stern, was always forever seared in our memories, because we used to refer to each other on set and in the dressing rooms in these, you know, endless weeks and months that we were on James Cameron's Titanic. We had lanyards as well. So you were like, what's you? Oh, I'm a first class woman.
That's right.
And Rebecca is the, and again, people who know this film know us all. They have watched every frame and slow it down and speed it up. Interestingly, I have not watched the film that many times.
Me neither.
But when I do, those sounds, the lines, there's so many lines that are seared. And yours, tell us what yours is.
Well, I was going to say, people may not, you know, you assume this, maybe they haven't seen Rebecca's episode. If you're taking a moment to digest Mother at Stern, Rebecca, please, who was
well,
the
I
mother
will say,
at Stern?
I am a meme. You know, I think I did mention that last time. So if you go to Titanic and if you type in Titanic, it'll all be over soon. I come up. And it's very appropriate for all kinds of things.
We should have had you as the penultimate guest. Then you could say it'll all be over soon.
It'll all be over soon.
Yeah, it's one of those, it's just one of those moments. And when it comes back, like, oh, it's Rebecca Mother at Stern. And, you know, and it's, they've been our dinner party conversations as comes up in the documentary and Ship of Dreams, Titanic movie diaries, you know, that idea that Mark Capri says it the best, you know, you always have a chat with somebody. Oh, what do you do? I'm an actor. Oh, have you been in anything I've seen? Well, you might have seen Titanic, and everybody has. Everybody except my partner, Drew, has seen it. I never know, just to be cantankerous, because that's...
But he knows how it ends, how there's no thrill for it.
Right,
knows,
I know. Exactly. It's sort
Rebecca,
of like...
Did it? Did the experience of being in this hit, iconic film... Have you cultivated any interest in Titanic as a result of it outside of the picture?
I had an interest in Titanic. I think I said this last time when I was, I don't know, Nelson, I think you and I might be the same age, or maybe I'm older than you are, but there was a TV movie.
1963, I own it.
Okay, 58. So okay. I'm a little older, but when I was in grade school, 62, okay, you're my husband's age. I think I was in fourth grade, and it was like a movie of the week. And I just remember like, what? And going into the library and doing, you know, because we had the library in those days. We had a library. Oops. And just doing all kinds of research. Yes. Before libraries were banned
you could
made into skeletons. But I always had a fascination with it. And then I think there was another Twilight Zone. What was after Twilight Zone? There was another.
Night Gallery, or Sixth Sense, where this guy
was destined to, because he had been, I think he had dressed as a woman on the Titanic. He was destined to go from one sinking ship to the other. That was like his.
Always.
If anybody knows what series she's talking about, please put it in the chat, because I thought you were going to go with the Time Tunnel. I think it was the very first episode of Irwin Allen's The Time Tunnel series with James Darren. Landed, you know, they were traveling through time and then they landed. They were on the deck of a ship.
Is
and they're like,
Outer
oh,
Limits?
We're on a ship. And it was Titanic.
Somebody said, is it Outer Limits?
And maybe it was Outer Limits.
That was after my time as an adolescent, I believe.
And a TV addict, when there were only four channels or
and
something.
Boy, wasn't I. I mean, you know, the way kids are with their screens, I was with TV.
But Rebecca, I have to say the most esoteric surface thing, and believe it or not, I'm not in Los Angeles as I say this, but damn, girl, you look beautiful. Like, you're a MILF. You're the MILF at Stern.
That is so funny that you said that. I did a Ross commercial in 2021 for Christmas where I was Mrs. Claus.
You've gone into the grandma zone.
Yeah, but I was, you know, but I was peppy and sexy. You know, kind of dancing around the Ross the Ross store, and I went on to the Facebook Ross Facebook page, and all these women loved it. I love this commercial. They played it ad nauseum. It was like just played it to death. But two guys responded. One guy said, "I hate this commercial. I want to kill myself every time it comes on." And the second guy just went, "MILF." It was hilarious. It was just so funny.
Mrs. Claus is a MILF. Who knew?
Well,
but
you look
Alexandra,
fantastic.
You know, I did want to, you know, as I'm sorry, that Veronica was speaking, you know, it made me think of the time when we were invited. I think it was this. Was it the summer after Titanic? I think it was the summer after Titanic, 1997.
The Culinary Institute of America.
Yes. And they invited a few of us.
Their graduating meal was the last meal on the Titanic, and we got to taste it. I don't remember the peaches and chartreuse. I remember orange.
I was trying to remember that.
I remember orange, and I remember I was wearing kind of a Vivian Westwood.
You look beautiful.
Eating all that food, it was the most delightful.
It was so much fun. And I just remember I was eating meat in those days. I don't anymore, but I remember there was filet mignon. And yes, the portions were all very small. And they had a drawing, right? They had a drawing.
That's right.
Prizes. And I won. I won.
What did you win? What is that?
It's a little gold coin with Titanic on it. I should take it off.
Yeah, there we go. Hold it way up close. Well, we may not get it.
Oh my gosh. I knew it all this time.
There it is.
Oh my gosh.
It's got Titanic on it, and I've kept it ever since. It's a treasure, you know.
The memories, honestly. I mean, we're just actors, but we get to have these experiences, and it is one of the beautiful things about being you get to travel, you get to step into the clothes and the shoes of other people.
Yeah.
But not like this. And again, you frame it so beautifully in my movie. It gives me little chills every time you say, with your fingers like this, "We knew we would never experience anything like this again." And I'm never a truer word. And you wrote it. You wrote it 25 years ago.
That's right. That's right.
And you knew.
Yeah. I mean, those discussions we would have, because we would sit around, you know, getting high.
No kidding. You can do that. We were smoking.
We were smoking. It was Mexico. But, you know, pondering. What's going to happen?
Cash those checks, because we ain't going to see anything more from this. And even when we were all at the cast and crew screening, everyone was, it was all sort of mutual appreciation society, because we were all seeing each other's little bits that were still left in the film.
Yeah.
And nobody at that cast and crew party could have predicted it. We were all just going, thanks for inviting us. That was fun.
Well, yeah, and also going, wow, that wasn't the movie I was expecting.
No, I was blown away. I was genuinely blown away.
I was too. But it was kind of because we knew all of the work that had gone into the casting. So, you know, and as Jim said, he streamlined it. He streamlined the story so that it was about Kate and Leo. It was about Jack and Rose.
Yes.
He had all these other peripheral historic characters that didn't quite make it into the story.
You could have helped some other Titanic movies, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
you're in the best one, so you just,
Yeah.
I agree.
What would be your dream role nowadays, Rebecca? What kind of things are you going out for besides Mrs. Claus?
Oh, well, I have to say my auditions are about half what they were before the strike. So
that's everybody. That's the
business.
Yeah,
that is kind of everybody. And the last thing that I read for that I really liked, it's just sort of I just really liked this. She was a really no-nonsense character, giving this guy, I think it takes place in the 70s, giving this actually is David Aiello. And he's looking for a loan. And I'm just like, hey, sorry, this is not gonna. And then, start to have some compassion for him. Because I often get cast as the white racist. Okay.
What?
Yeah, I do. So it was kind of nice to be playing a role that was like...
Like a Karen?
Is that Karen? Yes, I get those roles. So it was kind of nice to play something where, you know, okay, yeah, I'm privileged, but okay, I've got some compassion too, you know.
Yeah, that's
changing really, times.
It's really interesting how people, when you say I tend to get cast as, when, mm-hmm. you know, when that must be something they're looking for and they see it when it's not yet.
You are always going to be Mother at Stern to us in the Titanic Talk community, and we're glad of it. So if you haven't seen Rebecca's Titanic Talk episode, look for it in the archives. Look for her in Ship of Dreams. Look for her the next time Titanic's rerunning on TV. Thank you for being a part.
And the meme.
It's so useful for so many things. End of, the beginning of, October 2020. I was sending it to people.
Well, you can keep sending it. We love you. We can't get enough of you. And we're so grateful you were a part of our special day today.
Thank you both. It's a pleasure. All right. Take care. Bye.
She's the cutest and the sweetest, and she's so supportive. And now we have another friend that that worked on James Cameron's Titanic with you, Rebecca. And it's so interesting because he has made such a success in a new career, in his new life, in his act two, or maybe it's three. I don't know how many acts we get nowadays. I think we get 10 acts now.
It has been 25 years. We have been allowed to have an adult life between
92 years. Okay. Please make the introductions, Alexander, while I have a sip of my Chardonnay.
Gary DeLellis was, I mean, talk about a privileged position. Talk about front row seat. He was, for the entire shoot, the stand-in for Leonardo DiCaprio. And I want to make the distinction because sometimes it's blurred. People go, well, he's not his double. He doesn't look like he physically and height and coloring you were specifically.
He's aging better. I'm just saying.
Oh, thanks.
You were not his stunt double. I think you did some stunty things by the time shooting finished. You can tell us about that. But you were his stand-in. Describe to people who might not know in this industry what a stand-in does, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So we basically set up every single scene that you see in the movie. Somebody has to get it set up for, say, the lighting. And basically, like, when Kate and Leo would come in, they would have tape on the ground, a certain color, and then me and Lori, who doubled for Kate, we would actually do the scene, and they would watch us do it, so they knew where to go, and then they would be like, all right, second team out, first team in, and then Kate and Leo would come in and do the real thing. But it really, I mean, sometimes we would spend 8 hours working on a scene because trying to get the lighting, like, when they were in the back seat of the car, they could not get that fogged. Like, they were trying everything they could for hours to try to get that fog on the window so they could do the hand slap.
We did it in a movie, my first movie, and she got out a steam iron and put it against the window, and it
really
was beautiful condensation. Did they ever try steam iron?
Yeah, this took forever.
Kettles and things. She just had, it was fantastic. We were like, where did you learn that? She went, oh, you know, some movie I did. And they steamed out the window. Anyway, go on.
I wish they would have known that back then. So.
Were you with Kate Standen in the back there?
Yes. Yeah.
I assume. And who was she? Are you still in touch? I mean, I would think that would be a very bonding experience.
We did, yeah. Lori actually moved to Arkansas. And so she left early. So she left about 2 months early. And then they brought in someone else to kind of take her place. So, yeah, I worked with Lori for about 6 months, and then I had 2 months with, and they actually had a couple of different people come in and out to kind of finish it up. So, yeah.
What's your fondest memory? I mean, aside from sore feet, sore back, waiting around, what was the joy part of it for you?
Just the opportunity. I mean, I was working at a grocery store from the time I was 16 until I was 21, and when a door opens like that and all of a sudden I come from, you know, not knowing where life is going to take you, and you get dropped into the lap of James Cameron, and every morning I wake up, I'm the first person he's, you know, we're the first people we see each other. I mean, I was with Jim Cameron, I think, more than anybody, because yeah, we were together like 16, 18 hours a day, 6 days a week for 8 months. Like, it was incredible. And just all the fond memories, like we just recently did TitanicCon in Vegas, and I got to go hang out and go to dinners with Don Lynch and with Judy, and just being able to hang out with everybody. And I think all of us, we've all been drawn to this for some reason. And yeah, I'm actually, so I just turned 50. So yeah, I'm actually going to be going for my 50th to Ireland.
I hope you'll see the Titanic Trail, not just the hotel, the museum in Belfast.
We have a private tour booked with Dr. Michael. So,
oh, yeah. Fantastic.
So we leave next week and we're going to be there for 2 weeks and we're going to do the entire island. And but yeah, it's just the history. And I feel like all of us have kind of been brought together for some kind of reason, because all of us are just so...
We'd better never take a cruise together. That's just the setup for a bad disaster movie.
I know. I'm glad the Queen Mary's docked.
Yes. Yes.
I am not going sailing with you people. No way.
yeah.
So how did you celebrate your 50th? Was there any Titanic involved with that? Or do you leave that part on the side?
Yeah, left that to the side. We actually went down. And so I'm in Florida now, which I love. It's amazing. And so, yeah, we actually went down and we got to race an actual NASCAR at the Daytona racetrack for 8 minutes. So by ourselves. So I got up to like 149 miles an hour and it was incredible. But yeah, there's just so much opportunity and things to do. And I was always brought up on the West Coast. So the East Coast has so much cool stuff to offer, and it's all brand new to me, so I'm just having a blast out here.
And your business is in Florida.
Well, we still have our tour company in Hawaii, so it's Kapoho Kine Adventures. It's on the Big Island, and we still do our tours over there. Tony, my husband, he flies back and forth every 3 months to try to keep stuff going over there. But then I started real estate here in Florida, so I'm with Berkshire Hathaway, and that's been super fun, and just helping people find their dream homes and things like that. So yeah, that's been a blast too.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And then, so what happens when you come across Titanic on television, which you must, because we all do, like you can't, you know, for those of us that still actually watch television, not just streaming.
Many memories. But... Yeah,
it's so, and I can't really watch it because all I think about is setting up every single scene. Like I don't, but the worst thing is I think hearing My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion, I mean, every time that comes on, I'm just like, oh, God.
You have a bit of fatigue. It's understandable.
Because remember, yeah, remember when it first came out, that was on like every 4 minutes on the radio. Yes.
I was an aerobics instructor at the time, and I had the dance remix. Oh, so the Celine Dion dance remix of My Heart Would Go On. My poor students were subjected to it at least twice a week.
That's hilarious.
And how are you commemorating the anniversary? Are you at all, beside from being a guest on Titanic Talk?
Yeah, you know what? I just have, you know, just the memories, thinking about the people. Yeah, I recently found out that I'm like 75% Irish and all of my people are from County Cork. So, Tony actually got me this, the Irish Family History Center. The Irish Family History Center, he gave them my 23andMe and my ancestry info. Yes. They went back 400 years to all of my family's history, and they've got pictures of gravestones, and anybody can do this, but they'll put this together for you. And it's like, it was just incredible. So I can't wait to go to Ireland. I've never been, and that's actually where my people
are. Oh, it's fantastic.
You're going to be bumping into people that look just like you and going, are you my 73 times removed?
Totally.
I don't think I have a drop of Irish blood in me, although maybe a 23andMe would prove otherwise. But I made two memorable trips to Ireland, and it's just the most fascinating, welcoming, warm, wonderful place. You don't have to be Irish. It's, you know, it's like on St. Patrick's Day. Everybody's Irish on St. Patrick's Day. Right. You don't have to be Irish to have an amazing time in Ireland. Yeah. And you're going
to
have
the
time
of
your life. We
need to go, Nelson. We keep talking about it, but maybe we'll take the movie.
I know. Well, we need a sponsor. I don't know. I mean, that's
Something
not where I mean.
Yeah. We shouldn't be dragged. We should just go and say hello to everybody, because I think You're absolutely right. That's what we're going to. That's the experience. I've been many, many years ago, but I'm sure it's just as you describe.
And we're going to make sure, Gary, that you get in touch with Dr. Martin and make sure you are connected. Well,
he's listening now, so yes.
He's messaged us privately to make sure that you get in touch, and we'll make sure you do.
Yeah, we have a private tour booked on May 6th, so we will see him. Yep.
Fantastic.
All right, we'll make sure. And we're so grateful to you and people that haven't seen Gary's episode. It's season one. I think it's episode 6. But you go into the Titanic Talk archives and enjoy the whole full broadcast. And Gary, we love you. Thank you for joining us.
Love you guys. Thanks so much.
Take care. Right now. Oh, now it's back to me. Thank you.
Here we go. Now we have another person from Titanic, the movie and Titanic. Yes. Oh, although we're only seeing her in silhouette. She needs a light in front of her.
We love
can you see me at all?
Linda Kearns.
How's that?
And I can see dogs.
And you can see my dog in the background, and you'll hear my dog.
And Linda, if you can mute your computer, because we're hearing ourselves. Your involvement in Ship of Dreams and how Alexandra came to you for this.
Oh, well, in Ship of Dreams, I'm one of those people reading my diary, my stream of consciousness diary from back when we were shooting the film. It was right after we had finished shooting, and Alexandra had the wonderful idea of having everybody write down their thoughts about working on the movie, and we all turned in little diaries, and Alexander read them and tweaked them and
put them together.
You didn't tweak them?
I would not read them. You were the writer.
I hope I'm a better writer now than I was then.
I think we all are.
Tell the story about being in the water and the scream.
Well, that was the first thing that I filmed was the being in the water. It was about the time that Leo and Kate were on the infamous door, and
it's a panel.
There's room for him. Honest. And they just said, roll them and start screaming. And this scream came out of me that I don't know where it was from. It came from another person, another land. And I think that scream actually was the thing that I was only supposed to be on the film for a couple of days. And I think that scream was the thing that made Jim Cameron kind of sit up and go, what? And he kept me around for several months. So,
what was it that moved you to?
Oh, the sound! The sound of all it was terrifying to be in the dark and to hear the screams of all of those people and to imagine what that was like for the people in the water when Titanic went down. I mean, just the sheer terror of it all, and just hitting that freezing water, and it makes my skin crawl just to think about it.
Lovely Eddie, another one of our said I'm not on YouTube.
It takes a village. We've been freaking out about this for a week, but we're learning. We're all learning together. I'm not hearing the echo now. Maybe she muted herself.
Oh, I think something happened.
All right.
She can hear us.
Now I can hear you and you can hear me, but there's apparently you're still getting that feedback.
That's all right.
I'm going to ask you, when you talk about the terror. I was thinking about how the anniversary of the sinking brings out festivals of sorts for Titanic fans. But what shouldn't get lost is the gravity of the tragedy itself.
I just remember when we first started filming and reading through the script, which was huge at the time, and obviously much of it was cut, but still a lot of it was shot, but then ultimately cut. But just remember reading that script and the individual stories of the people that were on the ship and that went down with the ship. And we look at the movie and we see a movie, but we forget that it was reality. And those people were freezing to death in that water. And there's no, I don't know how you can possibly justify celebrating that, you know? A commemoration, I think, is a better word. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it certainly is a painful story. I mean, I remember just being fascinated by it before doing the film.
That speaks to James Cameron's attention to detail, that even the smallest roles were filled by actors of your caliber who could communicate those feelings. What was your audition?
You know what? I didn't audition. Well, I went in and met Mally Finn, and she kind of, the minute she heard that I wasn't British or Irish, she kind of wouldn't give me the time of day. So John Landau was a friend of mine, and he said, well, I'll give you a couple of days on the film. Maybe we'll let you die or something. And that couple of days turned into 4 months. So that was luck and Jim Cameron.
Serendipity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the wonderful John Landau.
Isn't that amazing? Are you still in touch?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Maybe he's in the chat room right now.
I hope so. I hope so.
That's good. Oh, well, people are saying Linda is amazing. They're all excited to see you.
Oh, I can't even see the chat room, so that's really nice to hear. I have hide chat in full screen mode. I have all these things. What I know about computers, you can put on the head of a pin.
It doesn't matter because we've loved having you. We have to move on.
And we're grateful, as always, even with an echo.
There goes Linda.
She's so lovely.
We should have your man, Titanic 97. I'm not quite sure if he's in Florida. You know, he's not here, but you know who I'm going to bring back and give another chance is that Dale.
Oh, yes.
Hello.
I can hear you. Hello.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
By George, I think we've got it.
Yes, we do. We're going back to Dale, who was here earlier. I don't know, for people who weren't here.
We had some technical glitches.
We had some technical glitches, which, you know, it's live.
But he's stuck around even on UK time when he should be probably, you know, getting ready for bed. But we're just grateful that you're here.
And he's very well documented and featured in my film, because actually he's one of my first super fans. One of mine. You all belong to me. When you direct a film, you get completely, because you watch everybody's story over and over and over and over again. You fall in love with all the actors. You fall in love with all the participants, because you really feel them in your sort of blood system when you're putting the film together and getting all those bits of the jigsaw puzzle. So Dale is one of my first super fans, Titaniacs. And because he makes Show Us Again.
He was gentle with you, though.
Yes. I know, it could have been a disaster. There could have been a stalking incident.
How did we meet? Did we meet on, was that Instagram or was that Instagram. Facebook?
Social
media.
One of the two, and it was me going, look, I think I'm going to make this documentary. I've got some actors on deck to read diaries that, you know, we put together 24 years ago. This is when we were starting out. But I think I need to balance it, because the question of the documentary is not just bringing forward actors, but why, oh, why is this film so significant for people, and that has brought about people like yourself and Ilka and Zach and any of these people who've made a sort of life work or a life's passion. I'm not going to call it obsession, although of course it's obsessive.
It is.
It is. tell us a little bit about your passion. What specifically spoke to you? Obviously, the costumes. So talk a bit about that.
Well, it was the costumes. The thing is, I remember seeing Titanic for the very first time. It would have been December 1997. I was really small. And I remember it was so big. It was not just literally a big giant screen, but just so epic. And I was so taken with them visually, the story of what was going on screen. I wasn't familiar with the ship itself, but very soon afterwards, I did head into the school libraries and I did read up about it. But in terms of the film itself, it was those costumes. There was something about them that just gripped me. And if I do think back, I do recall there was a magazine that they were sort of promoting these miniature like rose dolls. And I was looking at these costumes thinking, I think I should try making my own. And so that there began my little journey, actually.
Those dolls are at least... I mean, they're out of my hands, out of frame doing that. But your dolls are, everything is so beautiful and tiny.
Can we get a single shot of him so we can see them a little bit bigger?
Hang on, where are you?
And we should also point out that Dale did the illustrations in your documentary as well. So, I mean, he's not just gifted with the costumes and the reproductions, museum quality, but to the artistry of his drawing. Look how beautiful that is.
Oh, and the gloves, everything. Ah,
and it's not just Titanic. Anybody that follows him on Instagram knows that he can do this with anything. I mean, he's just, it's astounding.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about you meeting multiple Oscar winner Jenny Bevan, who
did on
Titanic. But because you recreated a costume that she designed and built for Drew Barrymore.
Indeed.
Talk about that a little bit.
That was incredible. That was what happened was Instagram again. I followed the auction house that was auctioning all of these wonderful costumes, and there popped up a picture of this costume that Drew Barrymore wears in Ever After. It's called the Breathe Dress. In the film, she goes to being little barks over there.
Little pugs.
She wears this really magnificent sort of French Renaissance kind of evening gown. I thought, well, I have to try and see if I can make a little miniature version of this and go and take pictures of it with the actual human-sized garment, which I did. And I went to the auction house, got some pictures, and got to actually see the real costume that Drew Barrymore wore. And I was up until 4 o'clock that morning finishing off those wings. I was determined it was going to happen. And I went to the auction house. The people there were so kind. They gave me so much time to really look at the costume and really take as many pictures as I wanted. And then that evening, I just about fell off my chair because I got a follow from Jenny Bevan, so Jenny Bevan Designs on Instagram. And I took a chance and I sent her a DM on Instagram saying, you know, I'm so sorry I missed you, because she actually went to the auction house that day. And again, ships passing in the night, I missed her. And I said, you know, would you please don't feel pressured, but I'd love to maybe show you this miniature in person if you would be open to that. It's the kindest lady you could
but
ever
it's the greatest
she
compliment.
Would have been touched. She would have been so
the greatest flattered. Compliment
and
ever.
And she, you know, I went to her place in London and
do you have the dress? Do you have the miniature?
I do. It's, where is it? It's up there. If I put this little iPad down, it's going to fall. But
all right. We trust you. We can see it on Instagram.
Yes, go to your Instagram. It's Dale McCarthy Art on Instagram, right?
Indeed, yeah. And there's another extra little bit of information. Do you recall our previous discussion with Ilka last year? And
yes.
You asked me something about what I'd like to do with my miniatures, and I mentioned something about the Victoria and Albert Museum.
Yes!
Well, with, I think, Jenny sharing my little miniatures, a chap named Dan Ashworth at Cosprop, you know, the Cosprop.
Yes, very famous costume house.
Indeed, and I think they did some of the costumes for Titanic as well.
They would have done, I'm sure.
He, this chap saw my miniatures, again, Instagram. He contacted me and said, you know, He used to make menswear miniatures, and then with life and with his children, he, you know, he just wasn't able to. And he'd like to see if we could sort of collaborate and do like a sort of fashion history timeline. And he has a contact at the Victoria and Albert Museum, and we might be able to have
an exhibition. Dale.
So holding thumbs, let's put that energy out into the world, because that would be
it's the perfect place.
Well, we've been, perfect. You know, you manifest destiny. We've been talking about this for how long now? You know.
An absolute, it would be another dream come true. So really, life is incredible when things like that happen. And it's just, I guess, putting yourself out there. But
people who don't know the Victoria and Albert Museum so much, it's a museum of design and just, you know, history, everything from Roman pots to costumes.
And it's very esteemed. It's as good as it gets.
It's one of the reasons I love being in London, just knowing it's there. Mm. You know, that and anytime you just want, you know, it has a Dale Chihuly chandelier in the reception area, and then goes all the way through the ages to everything that's ever been thought of and made and designed. And it's absolutely the right place for you. I'm so excited.
Let's hope things work out.
Amazing. And dare I go out on a limb and say, if that happens, we're going to get to London. We're going to come and support you.
Yes. All right. Is it time to take?
Yes. If our 4:30 is there and ready to go.
It's Stephen. It's Stephen.
Yes. Is Stephen ready?
Dale,
we love you. Bye-bye. So proud of you. So keep up the good work. Thank you for coming back. All right. Here now we have a very distinguished gentleman, filmmaker, podcast host, historian, one of our most distinguished guests, but he's also kind of fun, as I know from personal lunch experience. Alexandra, will you do the introductions, please?
Well, Stephen, all filmmakers love meeting other filmmakers, because we've been in the trenches and we know how, especially independent film, it's such hard work and so rewarding to birth your baby. And
I don't know nothing about birth and no baby.
We birthed our babies at similar times. And so again, because of the cross-pollination, and I think through LA Beatles, who has the Unsinkable podcast, who can't be with us today because she had
not to be confused with the movie of the same name.
she was hosting an event of her own today. But Stephen is he's a co-creator. I like that, co-creator, but he also appears in his film The Six, which is about the six surviving Chinese sailors on Titanic, which is so good, which so few people know about. There's so many told stories.
Not as few as before, thanks to him.
Yes. Stephen, welcome. Thank you so much for being here today to help us commemorate this extraordinary moment in time. Tell us a little bit about your film and some of the process of bringing those stories to the screen.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that introduction. I'm unworthy for sure. And I just spent the last 48 hours with our friend LA Beatles. We were down at the Titanic Museum attraction in Pigeon Forge for a couple of events down there. And I was so moved, because now for people who've been there, or for those who haven't been there, when you start the tour, when you start going through the attraction, they give you a boarding pass. As if you're, you know, entering a White Star Line ship, and on it is the biography of a passenger, and you kind of have to wait until the end of the tour to find out whether or not your passenger survived. And they handed me the freshly printed boarding pass of Fong Long, one of the Chinese passengers, and it really knocked me back. I mean, I was really
coincidence.
Well, I saw that on your Instagram, and I thought, well, that couldn't be. Was that purely a coincidence?
It was no. I mean, they went and got it. They were like, oh, good. You know, let's show you what we have. And I just was absolutely stunned. I mean, it's not too often that you get to turn the pencil of history over and, you know, erase a little bit and then write in what's correct. So, you know, it's really been fantastic doing that. For people who aren't familiar with the story of the six, it focuses on the six Chinese passengers that survived Titanic. There were actually a total of eight Chinese passengers. Unfortunately, we lost two on the night, and then, but the other six survived. So it was a small sample size, but a very high survival rate. And that was just one of the things that kind of brought us into the story. You know, why don't we know anything about the Chinese passengers the way we do, for example, the Irish passengers or, you know, some of the other groups? Why are they so well documented? Why don't we know as much about the Chinese? So my creative partner, Arthur Jones, and I spent about 6 years, the numerology worked for us, about 6 years trying to bring the story to life. And, you know, unfortunately, we're still, the film has been out there for a little bit. It has popped up now and then at a festival, or the Titanic Museum attraction was kind enough to stream it last year for about a week, I think it was. And, you know, we're just still haven't had any luck getting a proper U.S. streamer. So, you know, stay tuned. But I have an announcement, which is that this time next year, we will have the book, The Six. My book will finally be out in English. It's been out in Chinese for a couple of years now, but the History Press UK is finally going to bring it to life.
Congratulations. It's a big deal. English
readers, and I can't wait for everybody to read it.
And you have changed history. I mean, you have shed light on this story, and continuing to shed light on the story of these Chinese survivors and the gentleman that did not survive. And it's remarkable. And we should point out, at least as I see it, that James Cameron, who was, you know, able to collaborate with you in some degree on your documentary as well, but the Chinese passengers do pop up in the existing cut of Titanic, although there was more that wasn't cut out. Yep.
Rebecca Erickson, were you referring to Rebecca saying the Chinese man saved from the water, even if he was cut from the movie? With that scene, you can see him several times in the movie. And this is how people know this film so well, the layers and layers.
The whole controversy of Rose and Jack and the panel, you know, people thinking it was a door, no, it was a panel, etc. But if it hadn't been for that's how one of the Chinese survivors survived. I mean, it's fair to say that James Cameron got the idea for the panel for Rose from the Chinese man on the panel.
I think he's confessed to it as well. Yes,
absolutely. It's you know, the for anyone who has the deluxe 2 DVD set of Titanic, you know, at home on their shelf.
Everyone, you know, listening right now, I can almost guarantee you.
You know, so if you've watched the deleted scenes, then you've seen the rescue of the Chinese passenger. And that is, you know, that is entirely factual, entirely historical. And, you know, it was something that we asked Cameron when we interviewed him, and we said, you know, hey, this kind of looks a little similar. You know, did one inspire the other? And he said, absolutely. And, you know, it was just a little too similar. You know, I've definitely had some audience members say, hey, how come the Chinese guy got cut? And it's, you know, it certainly wasn't a story decision. It was really just a timing decision. You know, Titanic, the film, follows the timeline of the sinking. And so therefore, you know, really every second counts. And, you know, it was just a little bit too much overlap, the two storylines, but one definitely inspired the other. So, you know, I hate to take the bloom off of everyone's rose, but, you know, it's
no pun intended.
No pun intended. You know, it was a Chinese passenger that inspired, you know, one of the great moments in recent cinema history. So
yes.
I began this episode of Titanic Talk saying about the inadvertent gifts that the Titanic tragedy gave to the world in terms of people developing their artistic skills, their interest in science, their interest in exploration, and certainly I think it was that for you. You had an interest in maritime stories prior to The Six, but you have been able to right wrongs. As I don't want to do any tremendous spoilers, but for those of you that haven't seen The Six yet, you were able to, through the recreation of the lifeboats, sort of set the record straight on some matters. And that's not something that is just done by a fan or not necessarily even by a filmmaker. That shows your chops as an explorer. Is that fair to say?
Well, I mean, I think now we've moved into a different phase of research for Titanic history. you know, up until maybe the late 90s, you could still do a little bit of firsthand research. You could find a survivor and interview them. You know, there was still, you know, people could go and access records and they could read other people's books and they could go out and find things and whatever. But, you know, now we're all past that. And I mean, even in many cases, we've even lost the children of the survivors. So, you know, we're now into third hand accounts at best. But our technology is so much better that we have, you know, high resolution scans of the wreck. We can apply physics in a lot of different ways that we just never thought to do it before. We can build a lifeboat, put real people in it, and see, you know, if the accounts hold water. You know, we can see, you know, that's really how we're going to move forward with new discoveries. And of course, there's always the trunk in someone's attic that's going to, you know, get opened up and, oh, look at these photographs or, you know, look at these diaries or whatever. But really, it's technology that's going to take us forward. And you know, just applying physics to or applying science in general to the accounts that we have and seeing if they match up with, you know, the real world. That's what's going to help us adjust the timeline correctly. It's going to help us take those missing jigsaw pieces and walk up to that giant mural and kind of stick them in place. So, you know, I really hope that we've done a little bit of it, and I hope that others will come and do a lot more. You know, even Cameron came back and, you know, finally said, all right, fine, I'm going to put people on the, you know, on the piece of wood and we're going to see, you know, who floats and who doesn't. And, you know, we did the same thing. You know, I was the cold water volunteer. We built a lifeboat. You know, there's more that we could do with it. So, you know, I'm glad we were able to contribute a little bit to the overall story.
Well, and it's appropriate on the anniversary and commemorating the event itself and the sad aspects of that, of course, but to mention that you have a podcast of your own.
Yes, a fledgling podcast. It's having a little trouble leaving the harbor. But yeah, it's, you know, after spending 25 years in China, I moved back here to New Jersey. I'm a native New Jerseyan. And I really just wanted to continue the kind of work that I was doing, but, you know, localize it. And when I started poking around with Titanic history as it applies to New Jersey, either passengers from here, passengers coming here, people who were buried here, I realized that there are a whole lot of stories to tell. And so I've been all over the state looking at different graves and what they do and don't tell you. You know, cemeteries are the most interesting kind of library because in some cases they're exceptionally terse and in some cases, you know, they're absolutely rich. And so, you know, there are a couple episodes are out, more to come this spring and summer. It's, you know, I told LA over the weekend, you know, it's just, I have so much admiration for what she's done, you know, 100 scripted episodes and for what the two of you do. I mean, just to, you know, everybody thinks it's easy. You know, it's like anything else. Everybody thinks it's easy and they try to do it. Yeah. Yeah. Well, if, you know, just sit there and talk and, you know, there's your podcast. No, it's not that at all. Not if you want to make it any good, not if you want to build an audience. So,
well, you're very talented at everything you seem to do, whatever you do that you're not talented at, we don't know about it. So, keep working on whatever that is until you get it right, because it's got to live up to the rest of your accomplishments. Stephen, thank you so much.
Thank you
for
so
joining
much
us today.
Good to see you again.
Good luck with everything.
All right, we've got one to go, and this is a very special way to finish out
special
the broadcast. Alexandra, who is our final guest this afternoon, this evening, this day?
Are we back on the Queen Mary?
That's right. Yeah, Don and Ellen and Judy were sitting right here.
That cabin is a rockin'. Do not come a knockin', because it's one of our favorite married couples and from one of our favorite families.
Hello.
Bella, the podcast cross pollination never stops.
The Cove podcast with Paul Carganilla and his beautiful family that he is so generous to share with us. Hi, guys. How's it going?
Oh, so good. Thank you for sharing your beautiful Titanic Talk family with us. And it's Jamie's first time on.
Yes, right? I'm so excited to be welcome a guest today. Thank you.
I think you're in the honeymoon suite. It looks like that to me anyway. Or maybe is that the cabin where Ernest Borgnine and Stella Stevens played out their scene in the Poseidon Adventure, perhaps? I don't know. But
yes,
we should point out there you're hosting your own Titanic events in Long Beach, yes?
I can't take credit for hosting. I was asked to MC a couple of the Titanic Book Club events that are here on the Queen Mary this weekend. Yeah, so we have a live stream happening at 3:45 Pacific that I'm going to be. It's with Dawn and Judy and Ellen. If anybody wants to tune in, it's over on my channel, Cove Pod, on YouTube. And then tomorrow morning in the Royal Chapel here on the Queen Mary, we're doing a memorial for Titanic and Titan at AM Pacific. So you can tune into that as well if you'd like.
Isn't it wonderful when your passion becomes a profession, and you know, mm-hmm. at least a side profession, because you guys do so many different things. You're a Renaissance couple, but Titanic, a hobby that became a passion that became now a sideline for you. And we should say, as we bring this webisode to a close, you have something very special in store for us today.
We are. Well, we were asked to do this tomorrow at the memorial here on the Queen Mary, and I thought, you know, if we're coming on, you guys are doing a memorial anniversary type of live stream, maybe we can share it with your audience too.
We get it first.
That's right. Yeah.
Not as polished, but so we're performing. My wife's a singer, and it was so fun to meet Nelson. She got to meet Nelson over at Tell Mama in
so much fun
December.
Yep, they came to a book signing of mine here in New York.
Yeah,
and they're just as beautiful as you can imagine, even more beautiful in person.
They're
beautiful kids as well, talented.
Thank you.
We love you guys. So yeah, so this is one of the songs that the band was said to be playing at Titanic Sinking. It's an old hymn called "Bear My God to Thee." All right. Move the microphone here.
Nearer, my God, to thee. Nearer to thee, e'en though it be a cross that raiseth me, still all my song would be nearer, my God, to thee. Nearer to thee.
Though like the wanderer, the sun gone down, darkness be over me, I rest a stone. Yet in my dreams I'd be nearer, my God, to thee. Nearer, my God, to thee. Nearer to thee.
There let the way appear, steps up to heaven, all that thou sendest me in mercy given.
Angels to beckon me nearer, my God, to thee. Nearer, my God, to thee. Nearer to thee.
Or if on joyful wing, cleaving the sky, sun, moon, and stars forgot, upwards I fly,
still all my song shall be nearer, my God, to thee.
Nearer, my God, to thee.
Nearer.
Spectacular. People are commenting, her voice is angelic. Oh my gosh, I'm getting chills. This is so beautiful. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness, indeed. Guys, applause. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you for honoring the memory of those on board Titanic. That's a beautiful way to do it. I'm sure everyone is going to be touched when they hear this again, when they hear it from you live tomorrow. Thank you for your sharing your gifts. You share so much of yourself with us.
Yes, so moving.
So happy.
Thank you for the opportunity. And yes, it's such an important thing to keep everyone in our memories, not just on the anniversary, but as we do in the Titanic community all year round. Mm-hmm.
Thank you,
Bob.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Thanks for having us.
Enjoy your weekend, and thank you for being with
us.
Thank you. Bye.
Alexandra, come on. Who has a better family of friends than Titanic Talk? Come on. I mean, come on. You don't get this anywhere else. That was fucking beautiful.
It was amazing. We are so lucky.
Guest list, like our whole guest list is like there's everybody, and the Titanic Talk guests we could not accommodate today. We love them just as much. We have such a unique collection of Titaniacs. We're so
blessed. Down in the description, once this is forever on YouTube and on Buzzsprout and Apple Podcasts, I will make a list of everybody's episode. So if you're like, oh, I really want to, you know, hear more about Dale Ilka, I will tell you what to look for, even though you can Google now and things, but I'll make it very easy to hear everybody's full story as they described their Titanic experiences on Titanic Talk. What a gift we have.
I couldn't, when we were talking about how to commemorate the anniversary, you know, all sorts of extravagant ideas came up, and I wouldn't change a thing. This was the perfect way to do it. And now it will live forever on YouTube, and, there it is. We'll see everyone next week, we'll see everyone anytime. We're never more than a click away. We're so grateful. Do something nice for someone today in honor of someone who can't because of a life lost. So honor their memories by going out there and being a sweet person.
Thank you so much, Nelson. Lovely to connect, Alexandra. across the United States of America. I'm going to play a little bit of music now as we say goodbye.
It'll all be over soon.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review. And if you'd like to hear more podcasts like this, hit the subscribe button. For information on where you can see Ship of Dreams, Titanic Movie Diaries, go to shipofdreamsfilm.com. Titanic Talk is a production of Ship of Dreams Film Limited.